Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Everybody, we are so excited to have you with us tonight, and we are in for a very special treat because tonight we have Sheriff Richard Mack, and he spent 11 years with the Police Department of Provo, Utah, and then moved back to Arizona to run for the Graham County Sheriff in 1988. While serving as sheriff, he attended the FBI National Academy and graduated in 92. In 94, he was named the Elected Official of the Year by Arizona-New Mexico Coalition of Counties. He was also named the National Rifle Association Law Enforcement Officer of the Year and was inducted into the NRA Hall of Fame. Now, I could go on, but you know what? Out of fairness to all of our great listeners, I'm just going to suffice it there to say we have an awesome guest tonight. Good Sheriff, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing really well. Thank you, Cynthia, and I really appreciate being with you because you're the mother of seven children.
That is amazing.
Yes, by two.
Okay, well, yep. Then you can still catch up to me if you try, but I'm telling
maybe
you.
Maybe your husband, maybe your, no, that would be impossible, but maybe your husband did the same thing that I did to my wife. I told her to quit having all those darn kids, and she just kept having them.
Well, you know, the old expression, people look at us and they say, you're so irresponsible, and I have to say, no, we're so irresistible.
There you go.
Anyway, yeah. I just want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. I really love your police officer stories. And back when you were being named Elected Official of the Year, I was on the O'Fallon City Council, the Board of Aldermen, they called it back then, got elected also in 94. And I served for a long time trying to, you know, obviously the police officers in the municipality treat the elected officials really special because we're their governing board. And I had a few stories. I went on a ride along with the chief of police, and I went through this O'Fallon Citizens Police Academy and learned as much as I could. And then I moved to the legislature and got to be on a ride-along with the Missouri State Highway Patrol, which was very fun. But I loved your story you gave in one of your speeches about how fun it is to go on a high-speed chase and how the guys really get a thrill out of that. And that's true. They do tend to, I guess you could say there is no bigger ego boost than to be the one operating the equipment and having all the other cars part the way as you pass by.
Well, it is if you catch the guy, but if he gets away, it's just the opposite. So
when I got elected, it's a
double-edged sword. But you know, the reason I even told that story to begin with is because I told about why a lot of cops want to be cops, and that's one of the reasons. It's a high-speed chase is better than any roller coaster you've ever been on. They're extremely volatile. It really raises the adrenaline in the driver and in the peace officer that's conducting a high-speed Code 3 chase. And so, you know, I just was trying to compare all the things that people want to become cops for, and that's one of them.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one of the reasons people want to be legislators for, and that is when we were on freshman orientation, they gave us several police escorts, Now, you talk about a special feeling. In St. Louis and in Kansas City, they provided a police escort for the legislators to go to a professional football game, for goodness sake. I mean,
why don't you just get on a bus and we'll drive on over?
We were on a bus. And they had the guys on the motorcycles whip right into traffic on Interstate 70, holding up one arm. And it would stop interstate traffic just so the bus with the legislators could pass through. And they took us down. Actually, this wasn't a Missouri thing. This was a national event. They invited some legislators to go to New Orleans to look at the flooding area. And they not only had an escort, they stopped the traffic on a bridge so that the busload of legislators could look out over the basin and be impressed with why we need to give more funding to them. But nevertheless, I wanted to tell you what I like most about you is that you have integrity. And I taught my kids all their lives that the police officers are your friends, and they're on the right side of the law, and they're here to help you. And, you know, we want to believe the best in people, and we want to believe that they are our friends, and they're always going to be there to protect and defend us. But when I found out one of my own city's police officers was living with the daughter of my best friend, I was shocked by that. I'm like, wait a minute. That is so immoral. How can any police officer also have such a high level of immorality in his life? And another one on the police force died of a heart attack, and the elected officials found out it was while he was in the arms of another woman, and how are they going to have to tell his wife? And it was this kind of thing that really caused me to question, well, maybe the police officers aren't the highest epitome of morality. Maybe they're just like us. They're just on the other side of the law. So you had an amazing story of when you confronted your own integrity and your own decision of when you said, wait a minute, what did I promise when I took this office? And you went to your city clerk, and I want you to tell us the story of how you had to tell her what did I just sign up to agree? What is that constitution? Tell us what happened there.
Well, it was the day after I almost wrote a lady a ticket, and we were all trained to write a lot of tickets, and in fact, we were ordered to write tickets. There was never a quota. But there's some agencies in this country who have had them and still have them, and I believe that's extremely immoral, if not illegal. And in fact, some places it is illegal, like I believe in Texas, it's illegal. But regardless whether they establish a quota or not, it's still the same result. You better be out there writing tickets because that's what your supervisors tell you to do. So I wasn't going to disappoint my supervisor. I'm okay, well, that's what we're supposed to do as cops. I did it. And I was pretty much just a by-the-numbers jerk. You know, I was a decent guy, I guess, you know. But, you know, I wasn't mean with people or anything like that. I didn't beat people up or anything like that. I never made anything up. But when it came to traffic tickets, you know, I was pretty strict about it, and I wrote a bunch of them, and I mean a bunch. And this one day, I'm sitting at this intersection right next to an elementary school, and it's kind of early evening, but it's a beautiful day. It's a fall day, and so I'm just sitting there making a few notes on my daily activity report, catching up on my day's activities, when this lady runs a stop sign right in front of me. I'm the only living thing within 300 feet of that intersection. Literally. There's nobody around. There's no pedestrian traffic. There's no vehicular traffic. And I'm parked right next to the stop sign at this intersection, maybe 20 feet from the intersection, and I'm in a marked unit. I'm in a police car. You know, it has all the red and blue lights on it and the markings and everything else. And she runs the stop sign right in front of me. And so she immediately pulls over, and I walk up to her, and she already has her license and registration out the window, handed it to me. And this lady never says a word to me. She's about to change my life forever, and she never says a word. And I just go right on writing the ticket. But before I did that, I realized what had gone on. She had about 5 or 6 kids in the car, and I'm sure you can relate to this, who were really acting up big time. And she started trying to take care of them, and she lost track of where she was on the road and unintentionally and unwittingly went through the stop sign. And she's in the middle of the intersection. She looks over at me, looks where she's at, and just throws her arms up in the air as if to say, what else could go wrong today? And there's no question she is having a horrible day. And, again, she doesn't look at me. She doesn't say anything to me. And I just go about my business. And at the end of the ticket, when you're writing filling out a ticket, the officer signs his name and his serial number, which I did. And then I paused. And I looked down at this dejected, depressed woman who's just staring through the front windshield past her steering wheel. And I kind of thought that she was wondering maybe why she ever married the guy that gave her all these kids. And I looked down at her cruddy old car. It wasn't worth $250. I mean, it was a cruddy old Datsun compact station wagon, really old, had primer gray showing through it, and bald tires and the whole 9 yards. It was obvious this lady didn't have enough money for this ticket if it had been a $5 ticket. And and I looked down at her snotty-nosed kids, and some of them were still acting up. Some of them were still crying, and she just wasn't there. She was ignoring them. And after I looked at her, and after I looked at her children and her car and everything else, I kind of turned my view back to the man in the mirror, and I looked at me. And it was the most penetrating gaze I ever felt in my life. And I asked myself a couple of questions. I said, Mac, is there anything you're doing here that's helping this family? Is there anything you're doing here that's making this a better place to live? And is there anything you're doing here that's bringing honor to the badge you wear on your chest? Well, I felt very ashamed of what I was doing, that I had lost my sense of compassion and fairness, and I walked away. I handed her back her license and registration, and I walked away with the ticket. I just felt so ashamed that I was about ready to give this ticket to this lady. Yeah, she ran the stop sign all right, but I was the one in the wrong. And I went back to the police station. I tore the ticket up, and the police station was only about 3 blocks away from that particular intersection. And I wondered why I was a cop. I wondered why we have government and we have police, and what was government all about? And I determined that I was going to start all over, and I was going to find out why we have police and why I was a cop. And so the next day, I came back to work a little bit early, and I was walking around the police station, and I was looking for answers. But I didn't even know what I was looking for, really. I'm looking for answers, but I don't know where to look for them. And after I wandered around the police department for a while, I went over to the city center side, and I walked into the, just wandered aimlessly, into the city clerk's office. And I blurted out something to this day. I'm still not sure why I did. I guess the good Lord was just leading me around by the nose, I don't know, maybe by the hand. And I was just following where I felt I was supposed to go. And now I said something that I just felt compelled to say. But I don't know why. Because this had never been a topic of conversation for me. And so the city clerk goes, Officer Mack, can I help you? And I said, when I took this job, did I take an oath of office? And she goes, well, yeah, of course you did. You signed it. It's in your file. And before I could ask, she burned me a copy of my original oath of office and handed it to me. And I read it, and I saw where I had signed it and dated it. And I was so ashamed. I swore three and a half years before this, I swore in God's name that I would uphold, protect, preserve, and obey. And the oath there in Utah said, obey the United States Constitution. And Cynthia, I'm going to tell you something right now. It's impossible to keep an oath to the United States Constitution if you have never read it. How are you going to keep an oath to something that you've never read? And so I was going to go quit my job right then. And instead of quitting, I decided that I would quit something else, that I would keep my job and quit being a liar and a hypocrite. So I determined that I would start studying the Constitution. And I did. I started studying arduously the Constitution and the Founding Fathers and what they had written. And then I went to a class entitled The Constitution for Law Enforcement Officers. And it was taught by Dr. W. Cleon Skousen. He's the man who wrote The 5,000-Year Leap and the book The Making of America. And this two-day class was for cops from all over the state. And 240 cops went to the class, and I don't know what happened to the other 239, but this one was completely converted. And I don't mean to the gospel. I mean to the Constitution and to the founders. And it was the most wonderful training I've ever been to, and the instructor was such a wonderful man and a powerful teacher that I promised while I was sitting there that I would never be on the wrong side again. And that I would keep my oath and keep my job both. And
that is great.
5 years later, I moved home and ran for sheriff. And I ran my sheriff's office in that same light.
And really, that's the only light there is. Because if you go off the constitutional standard, the only thing left is to try and make up stuff as you go. And then we become very inconsistent. I had a similar problem as an elected official when I realized that, wait a minute, when they ring the bell and open the board, everybody's kind of looking around to see how their friends are voting, and that's very complicated. And not only that, but it's unpredictable, because what if I vote for something and because everybody else did, and then I later regret it and find out I did something bad. And I think that's the common thread, is you and I have to answer to a higher power. And at the end of our lives, we realize that it's not really going to be up to us pointing our finger at Johnny and saying he voted for it. Doesn't that excuse me? No, we all have our own.
Well, and you took the same oath I did.
I did. And not every American citizen takes the oath to protect, defend, and preserve the Constitution. Not everybody does.
But every public official does.
And if you do,
every public official swears that oath.
And I had to swear it as a city official as well as a state official.
Oh, yeah.
So there are over 7,000 state representatives. And every
peace officer in this country takes the same oath. An oath of allegiance to the U.S. Constitution and to the Constitution wherein he is a public servant.
So did you have an easy time winning your sheriff's seat?
The first time I ran, yes, it was really close in the primary. I only won the primary by 111 votes. But I beat the incumbent after that pretty big. And then I got reelected in 1992. I first got elected in 88. And boy, that sounds like a long time ago, doesn't it? Whoa.
It does.
But I was the youngest sheriff in the state. I was 34 when I first got elected. I think I took office when I was 35. And and I was only sheriff for 8 years. I was hoping to stay there about 20 years, but I lost my third election, and right after I got reelected the second time, just a year and a half later, it was exactly a year later, I was the first sheriff in American history to sue the federal government and win a case at the United States Supreme Court. And the issue, of course, as you well know, was over the Brady Bill, but the Brady Bill was the first time in American history where the federal government came in to the states and commandeered the office of sheriff for federal bidding. And under that falsehood and that assumed usurped authority, they told us that there was no money attached and that we had to use all our departmental resources and monies and budget to do the criminal history and mental history background checks on everybody in our counties that wanted to purchase a handgun. And then to top it off, they said, and if you don't do it, there's a provision where anyone who knowingly fails to comply is subject to a $10,000 fine, a year in jail, or both. So they're actually threatening to arrest us if we don't like their stupid, unfunded mandate. And so I told the other sheriffs in Arizona, I said, I'm not going to do this, you guys. And I didn't have any clue what I was going to do. I'm the younger sheriff in the state, and I'm going to go, well, I'm just going to sue, you know, the Clintons, and everything's going to be fine, and I'm going to be this top dog taking them all the way to the Supreme Court. I had there was nothing in my mind about that at all. I didn't run for office. I just wanted to be sheriff. I didn't run for office thinking I was going to go to the Supreme Court against anybody, especially the Clintons, you know. So people even accused me that, oh, Sheriff Matt couldn't wait till he had to find a reason to sue the federal government. No, I'm sorry. That's an absolute lie. So by the time I drove home, though, I pretty much decided I was going to sue the federal government. And it scared me to death. I mean, to sue Bill Clinton, you know, to cross the Clintons. I saw the list of people that didn't fare too well when they sued or crossed the Clintons. And I didn't want to be Vince Fostered. And so, you know, I didn't believe any of this. And so I'm just going, well, okay, I guess I'll do this because I didn't see any other way out. I just didn't see any other way out for me. I wasn't going to go along. And so what do? You know? So, but I thought then I was kind of relaxed by the notion that my wife would talk me out of it. She was probably somebody kind of like you, because she didn't. And in fact, she totally supported it. And she even said this, maybe now we know why you were supposed to be sheriff. Because I shouldn't have been elected in the first place. As you mentioned, I spent 11 years in Utah with the Provo Police Department. And then I moved home to Arizona, where I'm from, both my wife and I. And I ran for sheriff, and I hadn't even lived there for 11 years. And not only that, I'd never been a cop in Arizona or my hometown. And I just came back to town and said, I want to be sheriff. Make me your head law enforcement officer. Well, we campaigned really hard, and I worked my tail off, and we won. And so 4 years later, like I said, we just won again, and then I couldn't help myself. I had to sue, and I sued, and that's all there is to it. And
well, glad you did.
Luckily, six other sheriffs from across the country joined the lawsuit, or we wouldn't have made it to the Supreme Court, I don't think. But anyway, I sued. The NRA helped with the lawsuit, and man, oh man, it was a real roller coaster ride. It was an absolute miracle, and we prevailed. And everybody needs to know that this decision was the most powerful 10th Amendment states' rights, state sovereignty case in the history of our country. I've never seen anything that compares to it. Justice Scalia wrote the decision, and man, it is a butt kicker. It is powerful. It is principled. It is based on the quotes of the Founding Fathers and the Federalist Papers. And he quotes Madison in the decision several times. So it's a real powerful decision. I highly recommend everybody listening to your program, everybody in the country should read this decision. It says this, and it's based on this principle. The states are not subject to federal direction, and the states cannot be compelled to enact or administer a federal regulatory program. Those are not my words. Those are the words of the Supreme Court. The United States government violates my decision on basically a weekly basis. But the states even do worse because they don't comply with it. And we open the door for the states to make the federal government irrelevant, and they just won't do it. And now I go across the country doing conventions and rallies and Tea Party rallies and meetings, and I do training for sheriffs and their police and their deputies and their other police agencies, trying to get everyone to do one simple thing: keep your word, keep your oath, and defend the Constitution. That is my life's work, and that is why I formed the CSPOA, which is the convention you attended on May 31st.
When that was wonderful, and the point you were making is you devoted yourself actually to helping other sheriffs get elected, because that's the secret weapon. People get the notion that if you run for higher office that you'll make a bigger difference, and yet in 2006 you ran for Congress as a Libertarian, and you got less than 4% of the vote. And I was shocked that, I mean, a guy of your stature, and then you ran as a Republican in 2012, and even on the Republican ticket, you got less than 15% of the vote. So help me understand, why should anyone run against an incumbent if they're just going to get blown away by the millions of dollars it takes to win one of these offices? Is there really any way we can overcome the odds and make a difference? I mean, help us understand how you pieced this together in your life.
Well, you know, I'm very much convinced that Washington, D.C. politics, even if I had been elected, I wouldn't been able to change all that corruption. I would have been another Ron Paul, and I'm going to tell you, Ron Paul's a friend of mine, and I think he's a great man, but I think he was highly ineffective. Some other people would say, oh, well, he brought a lot of principles to the debate and to the forefront. It was still ineffective. Being the only one voting no against all these ridiculous laws we have in our country, being the only one to vote no against raising the debt ceiling, maybe two or three people in Washington do that. The guy ran against in Texas for Congress last year was Lamar Smith, and he's been there 25 years, you know, and he'll stay there as long as he wants. And people always say, "Man, we need a change. We need to do something different." But when it comes to their own guy, they don't feel that way. And so even though Congress at the time had a 9% approval rating, 90% of all the congressmen got reelected. And so that's an indictment in and of itself against Washington, D.C. politics. I think Washington, D.C. is so corrupt. It's the most corrupt place on the face of the planet. These people don't care about you or me. Senator McCaskill in Missouri could care less about you or freedom or constitutional propriety. She does not care about the intent of the Founding Fathers when they wrote the Constitution. She is a liberal socialist, but so was Lamar Smith, and he's a Republican. He is a liberal socialist, and he voted now 8 times to raise the national debt. And these people have no conscience. They have no integrity. they will continue to do whatever it takes to get reelected and lie, cheat, or steal to get reelected. And I'm not crying sour grapes. This is how I felt before I ran. This is how I feel now. And the answer I truly feel was there even when I ran for Senate and Congress. The solution is locally. We, city councils, county commissioners, sheriffs, state reps and governors, those are the people who must erect the barriers, which was the title of our convention in Missouri in St. Charles 2 months ago. We must erect the barriers. James Madison said, "We can safely rely on the disposition of state legislatures to erect the barriers against the encroachments of the national authority." That is our job. We are the ultimate check and balance. We must erect the barrier. And we have to do it at a local level.
I believe in that. I think that is absolutely correct.
It's our only solution left. You know, Rand Paul is not our solution. Ted Cruz is not our solution. In fact, I asked Ted Cruz while I was running for Congress in Texas. I said, "What are we going to do with the United Nations?" He said, "Nothing. We have to stay in there." I hope he's changed his mind since then, but this was just a year ago that Ted Cruz said that we must maintain our membership and support of the United Nations. And so if he hasn't changed his mind by now, but even if he has, he is not going to change Washington, D.C., and quite frankly, he's not even qualified to run for president, yet people are talking like he is. He was born in Canada. He cannot run for president. It's the same thing we said about Barack Obama, and for us to go around and say, yeah, now we can vote for him, well, we can't. He wasn't born in the United States, and you have to be. And I think Ted Cruz is a pretty decent guy, but if we don't start taking America back, county by county and state by state, Washington, D.C. is not going to reject its own tyranny. Washington, D.C. is not going to balance its own ridiculous budget. Washington, D.C. is not going to rein in the IRS. Washington, D.C. is not going to stop the Federal Reserve. Washington, D.C. is not going to stop gun control. Washington, D.C. is not going to support, defend, and protect and preserve the United States Constitution. These things are clear. These things we already know. History has taught us these things. And if we don't learn from history, we are doomed to repeat it. And that's the indictment against the American people. We are very ignorant and ignorant voters. And when it comes to that, Thomas Jefferson said, if you expect to be ignorant and free, you expect what never was or what never will be. And so we've got to wise up, and the place we can do it and start taking America back is in our cities and our counties, and we can then make that branch out to the states. We can live in free counties if we have sheriffs and county commissioners and city councils working together to erect the barriers and to get Washington, D.C. out of our lives and off our backs. And the number one thing that we have to do immediately is get the IRS out of our counties, off the backs of our people, and make them irrelevant. Make all the agencies and bureaucracies of Washington, D.C. irrelevant. And if we have sheriffs across the country standing up and doing this, we can keep this movement peaceful, and we can make it very effective. And we have lots of sheriffs that are already doing this.
And that is encouraging and inspiring. But let me
Well, you met some of them.
Yeah, I did. I never felt more safe. If there were a catastrophe and people started trying to do bad things, I felt like I was with people who understood the law and the importance of upholding the Constitution. But yet there are a lot of voters who are ignorant, as you said, and there are a lot of people who run nobly for those offices and still don't win. So do you believe there is value in running a campaign even when the most constitutional candidate loses?
I think there's some value to it, and I was just asked this question by a friend of mine over the weekend, and I was in Florida for a rally and fundraiser for Sheriff Finch, who nullified, I don't know if you know his story yet, but he nullified an arrest of a citizen in his county, and he later, Sheriff Finch, was later arrested and removed from office for doing so. And so we're supporting that good man. He really is a constitutional sheriff. He's truly a David standing against Goliath, and I think he's going to topple Goliath, and I think he's going to win this. I don't even think it's going to go to court because they've already offered him a deal, and it's obvious they don't have a case. But regardless of that, let's see, where was I going? What was your question?
You were going to answer the question of what's the value of running a campaign.
Oh, yes, of running, of course.
The voters don't recognize who's the most constitutional candidate.
I think the real value of that is I hate to tell you this, but I think it's a it stands as a testimony against our country for rejecting honest and integrous people and constitutional people. I believe that that's going to be held against us, and I believe that that's going to take us back to the scripture that tells us that if you will turn yourselves, I will heal your land. And we're doing just the opposite. And I believe that we will come under condemnation for that. But the Lord has put very honorable and qualified candidates all across this country. And the people of this country, with the media and voter fraud and just apathy and ignorance, the people have rejected these good, strong candidates. And I've seen it far too many times. That is the only thing I can see that this has had any purpose. So, you know, other people say, well, it's good to get out there and try and fight and give people something to believe in and all of that, and to, you know, change the debate and get it going and aimed at other things. Well, you know, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, I was, when I ran for Senate in Arizona, they wouldn't even let me be involved in the debates between the Democrat and the Republican. So, you know, the media did that. Channel 12 did that. And so, you know, it's so corrupt. And people are going to continue to vote for who gives them the most things. And it's so selfish and so unconstitutional and so contrary to the constitutional republic that was established for America. And gradual and silent encroachments are now destroying our country. But the thing of it is, it's not gradual and silent anymore. Barack Obama has brought in a new era of complete and brazen and blatant disdain and destruction of our Constitution. And there is no way that our country can survive this. If you destroy our foundation, the rest of the building will fall.
Do you have any regrets having run on the Libertarian ticket?
Yeah, I did. You know, some people talked to me about that, and they said, hey, we just need a big name to be on the ballot, and I didn't like the other two candidates at all. And so I said, yeah, go ahead, put me down. But you know, it hurt me for other future things, but I don't have any strong partisan feelings either way. Democrats and Republicans are pretty much equally responsible for the destruction of America.
I found that out. I was the chairman of the Republican Central Committee in St. Charles County, and it was a committee of 28 members, all good Republicans, until they decided they didn't want to be constitutional, most of them.
No, they don't.
And
the mainstream Republicans don't care about the Constitution either.
No, and that really was a huge disappointment because I'd been trained life that the Republicans are the ones who stand up for the Constitution. But nevertheless, I gave up my chairmanship to run for lieutenant governor on the Constitution Party ticket. And a friend of mine on the committee said he was worried that if I gave up my chairmanship, we would have a problem with the caucus that they were going to have a few months later. And I said not to worry because actually, you know, they're they did it fine. He chaired the meeting last time, and all the good things happened. So, I was surprised when we created a national sensation in our county because the caucus decomposed, and then he was outside talking on a chair. He stood up on a chair so people could see him, and our very own St. Charles County police officers arrested him. And I went to the court case, and the case proved to be ridiculous when the question was, is there a law against standing on a chair and talking to people? And, of course,
yeah.
No, there's no law against that. And you'd like
well,
to believe
you know,
the police
right
officer,
now they'll make you get a permit to do that, though.
Well, whatever happened to our freedom of speech? And whatever happened to our Fourth Amendment right to not be searched without a search warrant? And whatever
well,
happened...
the whole thing is going down the tubes, and the Republicans and Democrats are flushing it down the toilet so that they can try political posturing for re-election. You know, the most important thing for Democrats and Republicans is to get re-elected. And it is not to stand for principle. It is not to support constitutional precepts. It is not to balance budgets. It's not to help people and get the government off their backs. It is to win re-election. I wish our country was fighting between the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party, and that would be ideal in my mind. But it's not, and the country has shown nothing but disdain for the other third parties, and it's just really too bad that. That we have allowed the Democrats and Republicans to gain a monopoly over our liberty and freedom.
Well, while we were in St. Charles County, you had the books there called They Fired the First Shot. And very early in the book is the story about Rwanda. And I don't remember hearing that firsthand. It kind of glazed over me in the news. And when I read it in the book, I finally got it, that you had
people. Yeah, me too.
People,
I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah, what happened to a country is you had people who were motivated to kill their fellow Rwandans, and they were killed either if they were of the wrong tribe or they were killed if they didn't kill the people of the wrong tribe. And that so what happened is they engaged the citizens into doing the dirty work. And you
right.
either killed people or you were killed. And then that reminded me of one of my favorite movies, The Sound of Music, where there was the scene near the end when the Von Trapp family was hiding in the monastery and Liesel's boyfriend, Rolf, found them. And he had a tough decision to make. Do I side with the government or do I do what's right? And he made the bad decision to call out the Nazis to come and get them. The point made in the book and in The Sound of Music is we never know when we may be called upon to make that decision. And if we have the sheriffs working to protect the citizens, we'll be safe. And if we have them giving their loyalty to an administration that is bent on killing us, we could all end up in serious trouble.
Well, they've already allowed that to occur, and the President of the United States and his administration have gotten away with murder, and I'm serious. They've gotten away with murder. Fast and furious, the guns that they sent down to Mexico killed about 400 Mexican nationals, and at least two federal agents, Brian Terry being one, who was killed with those weapons. They never answered for it. And in fact, just the opposite, right when things were happening that looked like it was going to bust that scandal wide open, the president moved in and declared executive privilege, and there hasn't been basically anything since. So, you know, Barack Obama is a liar, but he's not alone. And the thing of it is, so is John McCain. John McCain wants us to jump into Syria now. I mean, why don't we just invade every country in the Middle East and just take it over and run the whole place? And, you know, that we are assuming this kind of police authority over the rest of the world is so arrogant and so misplaced and so unconstitutional. And, you know, they're going to go in there and start bombing and say, well, this is just a police action and we don't have to get a, we don't have to follow the Constitution and we don't have to get a declaration of war from Congress. We've been in all these wars, and the last time that we had a constitutional war was World War II, where FDR asked Congress for a declaration of war because that's what the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, requires. And yet, again and again and again, our leaders there will not follow the Constitution, make excuses as to why they don't and will not, and yet they've taken a solemn oath to do just that. So I don't trust any of them there. John McCain isn't any better or worse than Harry Reid or John Kerry and the rest of these others. And right now what you're seeing is all this spin and salesmanship trying to convince the American people as to why we should go to war with Syria. And but believe me, I don't support any heinous acts from anybody in government, but especially here in the United States, where we still incarcerate innocent people. We conduct random audits against American citizens through the IRS. We have this Gestapo IRS going after people and destroying lives. We have raids of SWAT teams that happen now 80,000 times a year in this country. And, you know, you talked about the used to be that we taught that cops were our friends. I don't tell people that anymore, you know, and I don't defend cops anymore. And all the police brutality and these raids, you know, we had how many SWAT team raids that we had in 1985? It was like 3,000 in our entire country. And now it's over 80,000. We even have the Department of Education using a SWAT team to raid homes of people who have not made their payments on their student loans. That is an absolute fact. And yet we act like we're supposed to go police somebody else because they're doing horrible things. Why don't we clean up our own country, and then we'll see about trying to kill other people if they don't behave.
How is that working out for you in getting more constitutional sheriffs nationwide? Are you able to see that we're making headway?
Yeah, we are, and I'm not a very patient guy, never have been, and I just keep being impatient with more sheriffs getting on board. I'm really fed up with sheriffs or peace officers or chiefs who say, oh, I don't want to cause any waves, and you know what, I'm just doing my job. And, you know, when people are saying they're just doing their job, that means they're following orders. And that was the Nuremberg defense. And it's not a defense at all. We are supposed to be the guards of the Constitution. We are supposed to be the guards of the Republic. And if we compromise that oath, and we make excuses as to why we won't keep our oath and say, well, I got a job and I want a paycheck and I got a family to support. In other words, you're such a wimp and coward that you will compromise the liberty and freedom and your oath of office. You'll compromise the liberty and freedom of the people you work for so you can keep your money and your pension coming. You know, that's just political prostitution. And we've already got enough of that in Washington, D.C. And any sheriff and peace officer that is willing to compromise liberty to keep his pension or his job is nothing but a coward and a traitor.
And at times like these, I have to remind them, look, buddy, you didn't run for Miss Congeniality.
Yeah, this isn't a popularity contest. And
yeah.
we are the oath keepers, hopefully. We take our oath and then don't keep it and make excuses as to why we won't? No. You know, Sheriff Finch just kept his oath down in Liberty County, Florida. He defended the Second Amendment against the entire state of Florida. It ended up costing him a lot. He told them to pound sand, and he's fighting it. We believe that when he's victorious, other sheriffs will stand and take notice. And we already have, if you look at our website, if everybody on your show We'll go to CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA, Constitutional Sheriffs, Peace Officers Association. Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. You can see a list of about 500 sheriffs who have stood for the Second Amendment and against Barack Obama and Vice President Biden. You can see that for yourselves. So we've had a lot of people standing. We've had a lot of sheriffs standing. But we've got to branch this out, and we've got to do more. Every sheriff in this country has got to do more. We have a sheriff in Oregon who's really been standing. We've got several in Oregon who have. We've got some sheriffs in Northern California really standing, doing a terrific job. John D'Agostini, most recently, and we've had people nominate him for Constitutional Sheriff of the Year. You met Sheriff Clark, who I call the Black John Wayne. I think he's a tremendous man. I think he's a principled man. And his speech, I thought, was just phenomenal. What did you think about Sheriff Clark?
You have found some of the best and finest. I only wish there were thousands of them. And
yeah.
We can do that if we're pricking the conscience of the nation. We're letting, we're showing the way by modeling what it looks like. And I know you have to go very quickly, but I wonder if you can take one quick caller that we have who's been holding a very
sure.
long time. Okay, go
sure.
ahead, caller.
Yeah, hi, Sophia. This is Brent Stafford.
Brent, thank you for joining us tonight. What is your question for the sheriff?
Well, first of all, Sheriff Mack, I want to say I was at the conference here in St. Charles, and I had the most wonderful time at that conference and was so pleased with everyone I heard and all the speakers. And I hope you will come back here next year because I would love to see that happen here.
Well, I don't think we are. It looks like we're going to be in Phoenix next time.
Oh, yeah, you broke my heart. Well,
yeah,
know,
we're trying to spread it around. And I even live in Arizona. The first two were in Vegas, and of course St. Charles, the next one. But it looks like next March we'll be in Phoenix. I still want you to come. I hope you can. But we've got to get. I'll tell you one thing I was disappointed about. I was disappointed with how many sheriffs from Missouri came.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed there too. Now, we've got a situation here in St. Charles where our sheriff is going to be stripped of all of his law enforcement authority next year. And
and he supported it.
I'm sorry?
What? He supported that.
Yeah, he did. Well, yeah, that was his idea. So I'm actually helping... do a petition effort to repeal that decision. So hopefully we can maintain our constitutional sheriff here.
You guys have got a lot of work there, but that petition drive needs to be successful, and I hope and pray that it is.
Well, I do too, and I'm hoping to make it a success. But it's just the sheriffs are under attack all around the country, either by their governors, like in Florida, or by their county councils like here, or by the federal government where you got marshals taking over sheriff's departments. And sheriffs are under fire around the country, and we've got to stand up for our sheriffs.
Well, they are, and as you know, they got rid of sheriffs in Connecticut, and they're reducing sheriff's power all along the eastern seaboard. They've even done one in New Mexico, which worries me, of course, because it's in the West. But this whole thing is no accident. This attempt and move to diminish the role and authority of the sheriff is no accident. They know that he has the authority and power to stop the abuse of the federal government in his county. And again, if these sheriffs, as we exemplified at our convention that you attended, and that's the reason why you and Cynthia and I had such a great time there, because it was full of the spirit of freedom and it was full of hope. And it made you realize that the county commissioners and the sheriffs and the city councilmen and the state reps and other people that were there united in the holy cause of liberty, that it made you feel like there was concrete evidence that it's working, that it's absolutely possible, and that not only that, it's actually working in some places.
Well, and the other thing is, if we had a sheriff here that we could count on to uphold our constitutional rights, I don't know if you know what happened here a couple weeks ago where a guy got
yes.
arrested protesting.
Yes.
It would have been nice to be able to call our sheriff and have a sheriff's department say to the highway patrol guy, no, you're not going to arrest him for exercising his rights, you know?
Exactly.
But unfortunately,
and that's the key.
Sheriff's
that's the key.
It's not
just
here.
Against the federal government. It's against any government who abuses rights.
Absolutely. So that's why we're trying to save our constitutional sheriff here in St. Charles with this petition effort. we have a website, sheriffpreservation.com. So if people want to go and learn how to help us, they can go there.
Absolutely, and everybody in Missouri should be getting behind that movement. And, boy, I wish you Godspeed on that. If I can help you in any way, let me know.
I will absolutely take you up on that. I hope to make sure that we pull this off.
Sheriff, have you seen a trend around the nation where it's getting worse and there are cities who are having a movement to get rid of their elected officials who are sheriffs? Their law enforcement officers
take
yes.
it and administer. Yeah, another sheriff that you met there and who also spoke, Sheriff Jeff Christopher from Delaware, the city council, the county council that stripped him of his power, he objected and has filed suits against them, against the state, against Bo Biden, who is the attorney general for the state. So he's fighting that battle, and we've been raising money for him. We just raised a huge amount of money over the weekend for Sheriff Finch in Florida. So we have these two particular sheriffs that are really fighting for their positions and their lives almost. And so, yes, we're really behind Sheriff Christopher and Sheriff Finch. And I will say the National Sheriffs Association has taken made no effort to support either one. And even though their motto is to protect the office of sheriff, they're as political as anything you'll ever find in Washington, D.C., and we're really disappointed with the sheriff's associations across the country, especially the National Sheriff's Association, who has refused to help these good sheriffs.
And I expect this to happen in a Democrat state or a state where they're just so left-wing that you don't know, you know, of course they aren't informed. But we didn't expect that in Missouri. Missouri is supposed to be a state where we are freedom-loving more than anything else, and yet Missouri
right.
made national fame
well, you know,
a few years
ago. I have to tell you Missourians, I have to tell you show me people, we have sheriffs in California and New York fighting their own governments and fighting and standing. We have more constitutional sheriffs and movement in California than we do in Missouri. And we have some good sheriffs in Missouri, but I see more action from sheriffs in California and even in New York than I do in Missouri, and even more than I see in Texas, which I find very disturbing. So it's time to wake these sheriffs up and get going, and the way we do that is with people like you and people that listen to your show. And I've got to buzz off. I've got to get to some other appointments, but I want you to know, Cynthia, I really appreciate being on your show, and we'll have to do it again. What was the name of the caller? Brad.
Brent Stafford. Yes.
Brent. Uh-huh. Brent. Oh yeah, Brent. Brent, and thank you for the call. And this is a whole movement for all of us individually to look at what we can do. And you better look
well,
in the mirror because that's where the solution is.
Thank you.
Let me tell you one other thing.
Go ahead.
Everybody listening to this program should get involved with what Brent is doing, and everybody should get involved with their sheriff. You must have a relationship with your sheriff and know if he's a constitutional sheriff or not.
Thank you for being a blessing to us, Sheriff. Will you come on our show again sometime?
You bet. Absolutely. Thanks,
okay,
Cynthia.
My friend. Good to talk to you.
All right.
It's been a
All
true right. pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Brent. Thanks to all of our listeners.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.